This is Radio Nigeria broadcasting live from General Babangida's farewell parade in Abuja this Thursday, the 26th of August 1993. After months of speculations, General Ibrahim Badamose Babangida has officially stepped aside from the government, and a new interim government headed by Ernest Shonekan has been sworn in. Chief Ernest Shonekan commences office tomorrow, and as interim head of state, he is to operate from the presidential guest house, Aguda House, instead of Aso Rock. Prior to the appointment, Chief Ernest Shonekan, a 57-year-old Harvard-educated businessman from the Southwest, had actually been serving as the chairman of a transitional council since January. The transitional council was put in place by Babangida to oversee Nigeria's return to democracy. General Babangida has also officially retired from the military alongside his service chiefs. However, prior to his stepping aside, he has promoted Lieutenant General Joshua Dogoyaro as Chief of Defense Staff, while General Sani Abacha has retained his position as Defense Secretary and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He is also the only military member of the interim national government. General Babangida will return to Minna, his hometown in Niger State, on Friday, where a public holiday has been announced so that people can welcome him home. Meanwhile, across the country, the new government is getting a lot of mixed reaction from people. All eyes are on NS now to see how he handles the controversy surrounding the June 12 annulment.
It's Friday morning, the 27th of August, less than 24 hours after General Babangida's farewell parade. General Dogoyaro is in his office with a group of loyalists as they celebrate his promotion to Chief of Defense Staff. A knock on the door interrupts their chatter.
Come in.
The door opens slightly and a young soldier leans in.
I said to fight you, General, sir. Brigadier David Mark is here to see you, sir.
All right, show him in.
Yes, sir.
The door opens wider now, and David Mark enters. The Brigadier General was a member of the original group that brought Babangida into power in August 1985 and was close to the president throughout his reign. He was a prominent member of the group of Babangida loyalists in Abuja, known as the IBB Boys. Brigadier Mark salutes as he enters the room.
Good day, sir.
David.
Sir.
How do you do? Hope there is no problem.
There is some disturbing news about Abacha's action since the president left. I thought you might want to know.
Okay, go on.
Yesterday, Abacha met the retired service chiefs secretly and extended their service till the 17th of September. It will be announced on TV this evening.
Dogoyaro is not surprised by the news. He knew it would only take a couple of days before Abacha would start trying to get rid of him. Dogoyaro takes the last sip from his glass and rests the empty cup on the table.
There is no way that Abacha will be comfortable with me serving under him as Chief of Defense Staff. I know his end game is to become head of state. And as long as I'm around, he knows I won't let that happen.
Babangida's decision to promote Dogoyaro in order to checkmate Abacha was the right instinct, but that won't be enough to control Abacha.
David.
Sir.
Die Babangida for me, please.
Okay, sir.
Dogoyaro knows that Abacha is loyal to the military hierarchy and that if a command is given from the top, he will obey. An hour later, Abacha had just landed in Lagos Muritala Mohammed Airport. He is in the car, en route to his office at the defense headquarters on the island, when the car phone rings. Only urgent calls are allowed to connect through to the car phone. Abacha picks up immediately.
Yes?
Sani, good day. I just got a call from Dogoyaro. He said you reinstated the service chiefs.
As soon as Abacha hears Dogoyaro's name, he is immediately irritated. He quickly interrupts.
See, Ibrahim, isn't it too early for you to be dabbling into military affairs? You yourself know that you left in a rush. Several hasty decisions were made in your last moments in office. Abokina, let me do my job, eh? Nagode.
Abacha hangs up the phone just as the car is pulling up to the entrance. Lieutenant General Oladapo Odia, who was already waiting to receive Abacha, opens the passenger door and Abacha steps out. The two men start making their way through the corridors and towards Abacha's office. Dia is a lieutenant general in his late 40s and a commandant at the National Defense College in Kaduna. Abacha has known Dia for a long time. He is someone Abacha knows can be loyal to him, someone he knows he can control. Abacha starts to confide in him.
We may have a slight problem. I am sure you've heard that Babangida has appointed Ogunyaru as the chief of defense.
Yes, I have.
Then I am sure you know that I will not let that happen. I will have to remove him and offer him another post, preferably a political appointment.
Yes, sir. You know the entire Lagos group won't accept Dogoyaro. But then, who do you think will fit as chief of defense?
They have reached the entrance to Abacha's office. He stops walking and faces off with General Dia.
Don't say anything, Dipo. You and I both know that you are qualified for this. And we both know what Dogonyaro is capable of. I won't put it past him to be planning to take over government. So we have to be prepared. I need you to do something for me.
What do you need? Anything?
To. In the coming month, we have to start reaching out to several vested interests across the country for consultation before we make our final move. I want you to talk to the Yoruba leaders. Your people are the most aggrieved on this June 12th issue. If anyone can instill confidence in them as regards the Nigerian polity, it will be one of their sons.
What about Shoniko?
Don't worry about Shoniko. We will remove him in due season and settle this June 12th question once and for all. What do you say?
I am here.
The two men enter the office to continue to plot. Abacha is aware that this plot needs to be different from the others because this time he is not up against a military ruler. The optics of overthrowing a civilian government, even if that government was not elected, is very different. It requires engineered chaos delivered with surgical precision. And most importantly, there must not be any bloodshed. From Triple E Media Productions, I am Ikwamusa Ike Odiasi. And this is Nigerian Headlines. This is Season 1, June 12th, The Annulment, Episode 4, Buying Time. That same Friday morning, and over in Abuja, Chief Ernest Shonekan is sitting at his desk, going through the daily newspapers in his office at Aguda House. There is only one headline that he is interested in. He mutters to himself as he flips through the papers.
I don't believe this.
He finishes with one paper, drops it, and picks up another. One of his aides, who is standing nearby, tries to get his attention.
Your Excellency, sir, we have here a list of ambassadorial appointments drawn up by the last regime.
The aide attempts to place the document on the desk, but newspapers are scattered everywhere. Another aide approaches.
Your Excellency, there is also a full report on the current force scarcity in the country that could be...
I don't want that. All of these papers are saying the service chiefs have been retired. Why don't I know that? Why am I just finding out? I'm from the papers.
Ernest flings the paper he's holding onto the table and sinks back into his chair. He barks out an order to the aides.
Ring up Sani Abacha now!
One of the aides quickly races to the landline on Ernest's desk and dials Abacha's office number. After the line connects, the aide puts the phone on loudspeaker.
Good morning, Chairman.
Morning, General. I'll get straight to the point. I'm surprised you reinstated the former service chiefs without discussing it with me first.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the country is in a political crisis that could lead to another civil war. I needed the service chiefs for at least 3 weeks until your government is properly entrenched with no security threat in view.
Abacha pauses a few seconds before continuing.
Or would you want me to remove them and risk a security breach that could lead to another coup?
No, of course not.
At all. That's what I thought. Forgive me, Mr. Chairman, I have to get back to work.
Before Shonekon could reply, Abacha disconnects the call. He looks over at his aides.
Well, what do you think?
I think he's signing you out, Your Excellency.
And you?
We will have to manage him until we are strong enough. Then I think it will be safer if we compulsorily retire him.
Shonekon is not sure that retiring Abacha is even feasible. The best Shonekon could hope to do is to manage him. After all, Babangida had left Abacha behind in order to provide the ING with some degree of military cover as a deterrent to younger officers who might be thinking of taking over power for themselves. And with so many other problems to handle, Abacha appears to be the least of his worries. Ever since he was named head of the interim national government, he has received resistance from every direction. The governors of the southwestern states released a press statement completely rejecting the interim national government and standing firm behind Abiola's winner of the June 12th election. On top of that, the leaders of the Nigerian Labour Congress, National Union of Petroleum and Natural Gas Workers, and the trade unions have all refused to honor his invitation to meet and negotiate a way out of this crisis. They all insist that they will not discuss anything except the release of the June 12 results. No doubt, the fuel scarcity and the strike action will continue to cripple the country. Shonekon dismisses his aides, and when they leave the room, he sinks back into his chair and loosens his necktie. He never expected the job to be so complicated. He removes his wire-frame glasses to pinch the bridge of his nose, and he closes his eyes. It's Monday evening, the 30th of August, 1993, 4 days after General Babangida retired as Nigeria's military head of state. General Adogun Yaro is storming out of Abacha's residence in Ikoyi, Lagos. He had arrived there less than an hour earlier on Abacha's invitation, and now he cannot leave fast enough. Adogun Yaro enters the rear passenger seat of the car, reaches for the car phone, and dials.
Yes.
He's retiring me, General.
What?
Then he told me I can pick whatever other political position I wanted. I told him to keep his political appointment. You know what he's doing, right? He's putting the pieces together to take over.
Dogon Yaro doesn't wait for a response from Babangida. Right now, he doesn't need a response.
I told you about him. You should have put him down when you had a chance.
Are you still with him?
No. I left. I told you. Abacha is not under your control anymore. No one controls him now.
Good evening and welcome to the news at 6. This is Radio Nigeria, coming to you from Abuja. It has been an eventful couple of weeks since General Babangida stepped aside. General Sani Abacha has been especially busy neutralizing his political rivals. Former intelligence chief, Brigadier General Haliru Akilu, has been demoted to Director of Military Recruiting. Chief of Defense Staff, General Joshua Dogun Yaro, along with the Air Vice Marshal Edward, Brigadier Generals David Mack, John Shagaya, Tunde Ogbeha, Tunji Olurin, Raji Rosakian, Lieutenant Colonel Sam Budasuki, all Babangida's loyalists have been retired. Lieutenant General Oladipo Odie has been named the new Chief of Defense Staff, replacing General Dogun Yaro. In the meantime, opposition against the interim government continues to grow across the country. Pro-democracy groups and SDP politicians are working behind closed doors with a large body of the National Assembly members in order to declare the 1st of October as the terminal date for Chief Shonekan's interim government and the swearing in of Abiola, who is still not in the country.
It's Tuesday morning, 21st of September, 1993. And 57-year-old Mrs. Bola Kufuriji Olubi is marching through the hallway of Aguda House. Her giant gold earrings sway back and forth as she walks quickly towards a conference room. Mrs. Olubi is dressed in a pink skirt and blouse with a matching neatly tied gele on her head. In her hand is a morning paper with a headline that reads, MKO Abiola will arrive on the 24th of September. Mrs. Olubi is the Secretary of Commerce and Tourism for the interim government and part of Ernest Shonekan's inner circle. She barges into a small conference room where Shonekan and other members are seated and throws the paper on the conference room table.
So this is the trash every peasant in the country is carrying on about as of this morning.
What is going on?
The people in the room are startled by her entrance.
Now it's certain Abiola is coming back to complicate things, as if we're not going through enough already.
She turns to Shonekan, who is seated at the head of the conference room table.
Your Excellency, things are getting out of control. People are against us. If Abiola comes back, people will start rallying behind him and they will drive us from office in no time. I believe that efforts should be made to instill fear in him, that we cannot guarantee his personal safety, so that he can remain in exile. It's what Sani Abacha should have done.
Mrs. Olubi glances round the room.
In fact, where is Abacha? I thought we were meeting him today.
He won't be here today. He's overseen another meeting in Lagos with senior officers.
Oh, great. That is just great. That's exactly what we need now. Those coup plotters meeting where we can't see them.
Mrs. Olubi.
Ernest calls out to her in exasperation.
The fact is that there's nothing that we can do about Abiola's returning. I already called him to try to persuade him to stay longer, but he has turned down my warning. He has full international support right now. There is nothing we can do. What we need to do is strategize on how we'll respond when he comes back.
Reporting live from Murtala Mohammed International Airport, Ikeja, Lagos, MKO Abiola has returned to Nigeria and has been welcomed by people as they chant his name.
It's late in the afternoon on Friday, 24th of September, 1993, and General Sani Abacha is at home in Ikoyi, Lagos, awaiting Abiola's arrival. Abacha had hoped that there will be more time to put things in place before Abiola's return. But since he is back, Abacha will need a new plan to buy more time. He has to make sure that Abiola is not sworn in on October 1st. The security detail informs Abacha that Abiola is coming straight from the airport and that he will be arriving shortly. Abacha makes his way to the front entrance of the house. He wants to be sure that he welcomes Abiola as soon as he steps out of the car. It's all part of the process of gaining Abiola's trust and building his confidence that he, Abacha, has his best interest at heart. A black limousine pulls to the entrance. Abacha motions and the security detail rush forward to open the rear passenger door. Abiola emerges, his black leather oxfords landing on the cobblestone pavement. With his left hand, he reaches for the buttons of his cream-colored suit jacket and fastens the flaps while extending the right hand out to receive Abacha's in a firm handshake. A few minutes later, the two men and their delegates are seated opposite each other in Abacha's main living room.
I have seen there is a need to intervene in this crisis and restore your mandate. So I have this plan. However, I will need your support to rein in the pro-democracy groups. They have to know I am acting for you.
What is the plan?
Abacha leans forward and speaks his words carefully.
I will remove Shoniko when the time is right. The military will take over with me in charge, of course. Then I will use the time allocated to the interim government to restore law and order. After that, I hand over to you.
Abiola is hesitant. He knows that Abacha has been reshuffling, redeploying, and in some cases, retiring several senior ranking members of the armed forces. So, the speculation in the press was right. He is preparing to launch another coup.
Sani, how do I know that you are not paving the way to take over power for yourself?
Brigadier General Fred Chijuka, the Director of Defense Information, who was part of Abacha's entourage, responds.
I've worked with this man for the past 10 years, and I can vouch for him. He doesn't have the ambition of becoming head of state. I know his intention and capacity. He's not an ambitious man. He wants to remain in the background.
And this time you want to spend after you overthrow the interim national government? How long is it?
Abacha concerns that Abiola is wary of the proposal.
Don't worry. The interim tenure ends on the 31st of March 1994. We are still going to be having other meetings when we are close to the time. Your people and my people will have to work closely together, from drafting coup statements to choosing who the ministers will be. Any government we form before you take over must be credible.
Abiola begins to nod slowly in agreement with the plan. He feels reassured. After all, his plane was allowed to land at the presidential wing of the Murtala Mohammed International Airport, and they have been giving him the red carpet treatment ever since. Why would they do all of that if they are not serious about restoring his mandate? But to do that, they need his help to quickly turn the public sentiment against the Shonekan government. And that means convincing the pro-democracy groups and other civil rights activists to advocate for military intervention to overthrow the ING. The two men shake hands, agree to work together, and spend the next 4 hours hashing out the details. 3 days later, it became apparent to the SDP chieftains and pro-democracy coalition that Abacha and Abiola had become bedfellows. It's Tuesday, the 27th of September, and members of the SDP are meeting with a pro-democracy coalition to plan the next moves to force the interim national government out of power and restore the June 12th election results. Abiola has been sitting quietly at the head of the table, listening and waiting for the right moment to add his own contributions to the discussion.
We are proposing two actions to push Ashenekon. First, we want the president-elect Abiola to form his cabinet and assume control over the country by October 1st.
Yes.
Second, the campaign for democracy will be starting another series of protest marches from the day after tomorrow, 29th of September, until 1st of October.
Bernie.
Yes. The decree used to install Shonekan was illegal.
Otani.
It was issued by a discredited government.
Oh.
If you step up now and form a parallel government, the people know who to follow regardless of the trade of that puppet, Shoniko, in a good house.
That is your point. It's true. Let's form a government.
Shoniko is a puppet.
Abiola raises his hands as he motions for them to stop.
My friends, you see, I am afraid you won't be able to do that now, my friends.
We would? Why not?
Calm down. You see, my friends, patience is what you need in order to effectively court a woman. We don't need to resort to force or violence to get what we want.
Okay.
You see, I have been talking to the military people. They are the people to talk to because they are the ones who cause the problem we are facing.
Yes, I said it too. Yes, that is true.
If it weren't for people like Sani Abacha, this country would have been plugged into bloodshed. I really commend General Sani Abacha. Because of his love for this country, he puts his common sense, his experience in the army, his tactic and his intellect to ease out Babangida.
Mm-hmm.
I have no doubt that it is that same common sense, that patriotism, that intellect that he also used to ease out his surrogate in the army.
Mm-hmm.
You see, my friends, we do not need to take over power forcibly.
Okay.
Let us wait for him to kick Shoneko out. Eh? Yes. Then, after he has kicked Shoneko...
They agreed that steps must be taken to remove Shoneko and the ING. But they did not want to sit idly by and wait for the military to do it. And unlike Abiola, they were not willing to put 100% trust that Abacha would hand over power after the ING was dissolved. They will need assurances from the judiciary that the June 12th election victory was still valid and to declare that the ING is illegal. The members at the meeting agreed to file a court case against the ING. A court case that would become the most significant case that Nigeria has seen in 30 years.
This is Radio Nigeria coming to you from Abuja this Monday, the 25th of October 1993, with breaking news. The Movement for the Advancement of Democracy, that's MAD, has hijacked Nigerian Airways Flight A310 that was en route to Abuja from Lagos. The hijackers, who we are learning are just teenagers, ordered the pilot to divert the plane to Niamey, the capital of Niger Republic. The hijackers say they took over the plane to protest the June 12th election annulment and have released a statement giving Shoneko 72 hours to resign. In the last few hours, they have released 34 passengers but have kept 159 others as hostages on board the plane. We will bring you more on this as the events unfold.
It's been over 6 hours since news of the hijack first reached Shoneko, and he can't seem to get hold of Abacha for updates. For 2 months now, his government has been jumping over hoops to reconcile those aggrieved over the June 12th election annulment. He personally visited Benue, Edo, Kano, and Sokoto states to consult with many political and traditional leaders. He pardoned Nigerian politicians who had been exiled abroad since the 1980s as a way to broaden his political base of support. He also established an 8-member panel of inquiry to investigate the annulment of the June 12th election. But all of that, plus the media campaign he launched to promote the ING as a civilian government of national reconciliation, appears to have fallen on deaf ears. This hijacking is yet another blow to whatever little credibility his government holds. And to make it worse, it is happening while he is attending a Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Cyprus. It has been an embarrassing morning for him.
Sir, it's Shoneko again.
Over in Lagos, Abacha is in his office with Lieutenant General Deer and a few of his other loyalists.
What does the man want? This is the fifth time he's calling in 1 hour.
I thought he was busy masquerading as head of state in Cyprus.
You, put that enough!
Sir, it's actually Alhaji Abubakar, the High Commissioner to the UK.
Abacha motions for the phone headset and answers the call.
Yes?
Sunday General, I am here in Cyprus with Chief Shenekon. He is worried over the hijack matter, and he's even more worried that he cannot get through to you. Just pick up his call, Manadan Allah. That's all I ask.
Let me ask you a question, Alhaji. Does Shoneko think he is my boss? Does he think the British can and would make him head of state of Nigeria from there? If he wants to know the security situation in Nigeria, tell him to come back home.
Abacha disconnects the call and smiles to himself. Pressure is mounting on Shonekon and the ING. And very soon, even the country's pro-democracy campaigners, civil rights activists, traditional rulers, and even the politicians will be asking for the military to intervene. And who is he to deny the country what the country wants? It's Wednesday morning, November 10, 1993. And 52-year-old Justice Dolapo Akinsonya is being escorted into her courtroom under heavy security presence. It's not every day and it's not every case when the judge's courtroom is under guard. In fact, this is the first time in her 3 years as Chief Justice in Lagos State High Court that she has had to have this level of protection. And that's because this case is not just any ordinary case. Abiola was suing the interim national government and seeking a declaration that the ING was illegal. The door to the courtroom is opened, and before Justice Akinsonya could enter, she feels a gust of warm air hit her in the face. And as she steps into the room, she could see where it came from. The courtroom is packed. It is so crowded that some of the spectators are standing because all the seats are taken. Justice Akinsonya takes her seat, the only empty seat in the room. And quietly and to herself, she says a prayer. She is under a tremendous amount of pressure. Justice Akinsonya, like Abiola and Shonekon, is a Yoruba from Ogun State. And she's acquainted with the Shonekon family. So she knows that the judgment, our judgment, will affect not only the political stability of the entire country, but our personal life as well. The case filed against the ING was based on a simple yet devastating technical error that Babangida made during his hurried exit from power. Among the decrees that he signed prior to leaving were decrees number 59 and 61. Babangida signed decree 59 to officially end his 8-year rule effective from August 26, 1993. After he signed decree 59, he also signed Decree 61 to promulgate the ING and appoint Shonekon as its chairman. But he signed Decree 61 on August 26th, and according to Decree 59, all his executive powers were no longer effective as of that date. Therefore, according to the case, Babangida had no power to enact Decree 61. Justice Akinsonya begins to read her judgment.
Since the 1989 Constitution came into force on August 27, 1993, I disagree with the Defense Counsel's argument that a dangerous vacuum would be created if the interim government is declared illegal. A court of law should always act justly without regard to the hardship that would arise by its decision. General Ibrahim Badamasi Babangida ceased to have legislative powers as of midnight of August 25, 1993. Therefore, any law made after that day becomes invalid and void.
The rest of Justice Akinsonya's judgment is drowned out by the uproar in the courtroom. Everyone in the room knows what her judgment means. She was declaring the interim national government illegal and unconstitutional. Across town at the Defense House in Lagos, Abacha and Dia are in his office watching the court proceedings being broadcasted live on television. Abacha knows that Justice Akinsonya's judgment will erode the ING's credibility even further and add even more pressure on the government to resign. But he's not entirely happy about the timing of the judgment because it means that, legally speaking, Abiola can now rise and become president. Abacha needs to buy more time to implement the original plan. He needs the military to take over the government before handing it over to Abiola. Over in Ikeja, Abiola and his advisors were already meeting when they heard news of the judgment. Their initial celebration had given way to a more serious discussion on what they should do next to seize the opportunity of that momentous court decision.
No, I think the president-elect should assemble his cabinet now. There's no point in waiting.
My friends, Wo, I agree with you, Shogo. But beyond our victory this morning in the court, other factors will have to be considered before we can form a government too. One cannot swallow hot soup in a hurry.
As the men continue their discussion, a phone rings in the next room, and a few seconds later, Abiola's personal assistant enters and whispers to Abiola. Abiola quickly rises from his chair.
Excuse me, Ojari, I have to take this call
alone. Oh, no deal.
Abiola leaves the room, enters his study, and locks the door. He picks up the phone.
Hello?
Abacha's voice sings out from the other side.
Hello, Alhaji. Congratulations on your court victory.
Thank you, General Sani Abacha, my friend. We are even considering the option of forming a government now.
That's the right move to make, but beyond having a cabinet, you will need to have full control of the army first.
Of course, Ojari. Isn't that the reason why we have you there?
Yes, but we may be having some problems.
What type of problems?
Security.
Yeah.
There are about 2 to 3 hidden groups planning coups presently. Their agendas are also unclear. We've only located one group and we've placed them under surveillance. So we will need more time.
How much time do you need?
A week or two at most. Then we will be able to move in. See, these men that are plotting, you won't be able to stop them, Wallahi. You won't last 4 days. We need time to get rid of them from the military before you can take over. Let's meet tomorrow or the day after tomorrow, and I can share more details with you in person.
Abiola sighs as he disconnects the call. 2 weeks is not too long, he thinks to himself. After all, he is waited 5 months already, and with the court order now in place, his mandate is most certainly assured. Abacha is simply asking for time to assure his life, and 2 weeks is certainly a price worth paying for that. Abiola leaves his study and goes back to brief his advisors. They all listen to him with alarm as he conveys information about the coups being plotted by some military officers. But he assures them that something is being done to intercept and apprehend them.
My friends, I want us to focus on getting ready to meet with Abacha. He said we may need to meet tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
Vice President-elect Babagana Akingibe, who had been listening quietly and intently, spoke up.
Okay, Chief. Gaskia, I am not too sure how serious this fellow Abacha is. I am just not comfortable with him.
I understand your worry, Baba. We all have our inhibitions, but let us just get ready for the meeting.
Kingibe nods in compliance, but deep down, he cannot shake the feeling that something is off. The events that unfold over the next 7 days will prove just how right he is to be concerned.
This is Radio Nigeria, broadcasting from Lagos, this Monday evening, 15th of November, 1993. The nation is on edge. Earlier today, head of state of the interim national government, Ernest Shenikan's convoy was attacked during his visit to Port Harcourt. University students stoned his convoy as they protested the government decision to increase the price of petrol. Protests have been happening all over the country after the ING approved the removal of fuel subsidy, which would increase the price of petrol 700% from 70 kobo to 5 naira per litre. In a related event at Ile-Ife, Osun State, students of the Obafemi Awolowo University were out on the streets as early as 6 a.m. Most major roads were barricaded, some with bonfires made out of tires. In Abeokuta, the capital of Ogun State, the protesting students of the Ogun State Polytechnic and the Federal University of Agriculture vandalized their house on Kwere Road and two cars all belonging to Mr. Adio Shonekan, said to be the brother of Ernest Shonekan, the interim head of state. In Lagos, students of UNILAG, that's the University of Lagos, were stopped by about 2,000 policemen of the Lagos State Police Command as they marched through Yaba and Oworun Sokei on their way to Alausa in a bid to meet with Governor Michael Otedola. While reports of fatalities as the students engaged the police. There was also a clash with demonstrators at Agege. Again, live rounds were fired. In the meantime, talks between the Nigerian Labour Congress and the ING have stalled, and the NLC is officially on a nationwide strike starting today. Several international flights have been cancelled, and local flight operators insist that they must obey the NLC strike order. The Apapa port in Lagos remains under lock and key. The workers saying they will only return to work on the orders of the NLC in Kaduna. As in other parts of the country, hospitals closed down in solidarity with the NLC strike. The Senate summoned Don Etiebet, Petroleum Secretary, to its chambers to explain why the government went ahead to remove the fuel subsidy in spite of a National Assembly directive that the issue of the subsidy is a no-go area for the rest of the transition program. It's a bit shocked the lawmakers when informed them that the NNPC is broke as it owes an equally broke CBN up to the tune of $10 billion. Calls are coming from all groups in the country, including civil rights groups, for the military to intervene and resolve the crisis. Even the human rights lawyer, Gani Fawaimi, who had campaigned against military government for years, has called on the military to intervene to stop this war of Shenikan's government against his people. We're getting breaking news now that Abiola and his advisors were seen leaving the defense headquarters not long ago. There's speculation that Abiola was there to meet with General Sani Abacha, though neither side has responded to a request for comments.
It's Wednesday morning, 17th November 1993. The personal assistant to interim head of state, Ernest Shonekan, is sitting at his desk, reviewing the calendar of events scheduled for the day. He can hear footsteps approaching, but they do not register as anything abnormal. The presidential wing is always busy in the morning with people coming in to meet with Shonekan. He flips through Shonekan's diary entry from the 2 days before, and sees one word scribbled in large font: unsuccessful. It would seem like the meetings Shonekan had with the judges in Port Harcourt did not yield any fruit. The PA opens a new page in the diary, and just as he's about to pen down the day's agenda, the door to the office flies open. The PA looks up, and the initial look of annoyance he had quickly turns into a look of shock as he realizes who is at the entrance.
General!
General Sani Abacha stood in the middle of the door frame. To his left was General Dia, and to his right, General Aliyu Mohammed Gusau. As the PA stands up to greet the generals, his eyes grow even wider as he takes in the full scene in front of him. Behind the generals stood a fully armed detachment of soldiers. For as far as his eyes could see, Abacha cuts the PA short.
Shonekan, now.
The PA is confused and paralyzed as he looks down at the diary, trying to figure out if there was a military briefing scheduled for the day. Abacha's voice moves him out of paralysis.
Now!
The PA turns and rushes for the door in the inner room, and without knocking, he barges in.
Matthew, what's this?
Seconds later, Shonekan emerges as he's hurriedly putting on his suit jacket.
General, I wasn't expecting you today. We don't have our regular briefing.
Mr. Chairman, sir, we have to talk.
Talk? You came all this way just to talk?
Shonekan tries to make light of the situation, but he could see that the generals were not in the mood. He quickly drops all attempts at levity.
About what?
The state of the nation.
Generals Abacha, Dia, and Gusau escort Shonekan into his office and lock the door behind them. Later that evening, Emma Agu, chief press secretary to Ernest Shonekan, is at her office desk, nervously waiting for something, anything to happen. It's been over 9 hours and no one has heard a word from Shonekan. The military have occupied the entire presidential wing and they are not letting anyone enter or leave. Everyone had been locked in their offices from the outside. They had also disconnected all phone lines, so there was no way to call out or receive calls. Emma looks down at her wristwatch, 8:30 p.m. As she's about to sink into the sofa in her office, she hears some movement at the door. She jumps up as the door flies open and a soldier on the other side barks orders at her.
You have to summon NTA State House reporter Muhammad Kudu Abubakar to the State House immediately.
The soldier turns and walks away, expecting Emma to follow behind. Emma is startled, and for a second she's frozen in place. But when the soldier turns and looks back at her, she quickly grabs her phone book and scurries after him.
Fellow Nigerians, we interrupt your regularly scheduled program for this very important announcement. We're broadcasting live from the presidential villa where interim head of state Ernest Shonekan is to convene a meeting with his secretaries and other members of the interim national government.
The Nigerian Television Authority, that's NTA, had set up their camera on a wide angle to capture the full length and width of the conference room. Every chair around the conference table was occupied except for the seat at the head of the table. Emma, who was wearing a red suit jacket that day, is clearly visible. She is sitting in the seat immediately to the right of the head seat. Unlike everyone else in the room, she still has no idea what's going on. Before long, the cameraman begins the countdown. And on his cue, the door to the room opens. Her boss, Shonekan, walks in, and everyone in the room stands. He is not alone. He is followed by a group of three generals. Shonekan approaches his seat at the head of the table and places a sheet of paper face down on the table. How strange, Emma thinks. He is not making eye contact with anyone like he usually does. Shonekan glances up briefly at no one in particular. And then takes his seat. As is protocol, everyone waits for him to sit before the two take their seats. The three generals remain standing behind him. As Shonekan reaches for the paper to flip it over, Emma could see his hand trembling. She resists every urge she has to reach out and help him. Shonekan lays the document flat on the table and he begins to read from it. Every now and then, he looks up and straight into the camera, but never at any of the people around the room.
Thank you for seeing me on such short notice. Ladies and gentlemen, fellow colleagues in the interim government, I've summoned you this evening to an unusual occasion. Earlier today, I met with the Secretary of Defense in company of the Chief of Defense Staff and Chief of Army Staff, and we discussed the state of the nation. They expressed serious concern over the general uneasiness in the country and the apparent lack of stability in the past few months. We spoke on the restiveness among the rank and file of the military. You will recall that the interim government is a child of circumstance. It was conceived in crisis and born in crisis. But records indicate that we have put in our very best into managing the continuing crisis. On the political arena, we have continued to work ceaselessly towards full democratization of our dear country. We have extended our right hand of fellowship to the legislature and have put in place the machinery for local and presidential election next February. Let me say loud and clear that here we have all made sacrifices for these past 82 days in a strong belief that our country deserves the best. I have an unshaken faith in the promise of Nigeria, and I believe that the best is yet to come. However, I regret to inform you that in the light of recent events and after due consideration of all the facts, I'm left with no alternative but to take the most honorable and dignified step of resigning. with immediate effect my appointment as head of state and commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Nigeria.
The cameraman cuts the transmission as everyone is still staring at Shonekan in disbelief. The silence in the room is broken by the sound of his chair scraping against the floor as he pushes it back to stand and take his leave. As is the custom, Emma and everyone else begin to stand, but he motions for them to remain seated as he quickly makes his exit. Shonekan wanted nothing more than to get out of there as quickly as possible. And even though it was late at night, he declined the military's offer to fly him to Lagos, insisting instead that he will drive. With Shonekan out of the way, it's time for the military to complete their takeover. But first, they have to pick a successor. The question of who will be Shonekan's successor turned out to already have an answer. Decree 61 was amended a few days before Shonekan's inauguration to indicate that the most senior minister will replace Shonekan in the event of his death or resignation. When Babangida stepped aside, he retired all of the service chiefs, all except one. The last man standing, General Sani Abacha, was effectively the most senior minister, and his appointment as Nigeria's next head of state was all but assured. It's Thursday, the 18th of November, 1993. Just one day after Shonekan resigned from office, Abiola and his advisors are seated in his living room in front of the television screen, waiting anxiously for Abacha to read the coup speech, the same one that they helped draft just a few days ago during their visit to the defense headquarters. The speech they drafted together with General Dia will reveal a plan for Abacha to take over for 2 weeks in order to stabilize the country and then hand over to Abiola and King Gibe, the democratically elected duo. Abacha appears on screen, dressed in uniform, his eyes hidden behind his signature aviator sunglasses. Abiola and his entourage cannot contain their excitement. They begin to cheer softly as Abacha begins to read the speech.
Fellow Nigerians, sequel to the resignation of the former head of the interim national government and commander-in-chief of the armed forces, Chief Ernest Shonekan, and my subsequent appointment as head of state and commander-in-chief, I have had extensive consultations within the armed forces hierarchy and other well-meaning Nigerians in a bid to find solutions to the various political, economic, and social problems which have engulfed our beloved country and which have made life most difficult to the ordinary citizens of this nation. Many have expressed fears about the apparent return of the military. Many have talked about the concern of the international community. However, under the present circumstances, the survival of our beloved country is far above any other consideration. Consequently, the following decisions come into immediate effect. The interim national government is hereby dissolved. The national and state assemblies are also dissolved. The state executive councils are dissolved. The brigade commanders are to take over from the governors in their states until administrators are appointed. Where there are no brigade commanders, the commissioners of police in the states are to take over.
What?
Abiola turns and looks at King Gibe. King Gibe shakes his head slowly as he mutters,
"This is not the speech."
All local governments stand dissolved. The directors of personnel are to take over the administration of the local governments until administrators are appointed. The National Electoral Commission is hereby dissolved. All former secretaries to federal ministries to hand over to their director generals until ministers are appointed. The two political parties are hereby dissolved.
What?
What is happening?
Yeah.
Over in Mina, Babangida and Miriam are glued to their own television screen.
All processions, political meetings and associations of any type in any part of the country are hereby banned. Any consultative committee by whatever name called is hereby proscribed. Decree 61 of 1993 is hereby abrogated.
Babangida folds his arms and sinks his weight into the sofa. In Katsina, Yar'Adua is watching the speech with members of his SDP faction. They are all quiet. Their faces frozen with shock.
States will be governed by civilian administrators to be appointed later. Also, a federal executive council will be put in place.
All across the country, Nigerians are listening to this speech. Some are listening with radios, some with televisions. At this very moment, everyone is a captive audience.
Fellow Nigerians, the events of the past month, starting from the annulment of the June 12 presidential election, culminating in the appointment of the former head of state, Chief Anas Shanekan, are well known to you. The economic downturn has undoubtedly been aggravated by the ongoing political crisis. We require well thought out and permanent solution to these problems if we are to emerge stronger from them.
Professor Omo and his wife watched this speech from their home in Abuja.
This regime will be firm, humane, and decisive. We will not condone nor tolerate any act of indiscipline. Any attempt to test our will be decisively dealt with.
Back at his residence, Abiola and his entourage have not taken their eyes off the screen.
For the international community, we ask that you suspend judgment while we grapple with the onerous task of nation building, reconciliation and repairs. This government is a child of necessity with a strong determination to restore peace and stability to our country, and on these foundations, enthrone a lasting and true democracy. Give us the chance to solve our problems in our own ways. And finally, I appeal to all Nigerians, particularly our traditional rulers and community leaders, for their maximum support and cooperation. Long live the Federal Republic of Nigeria.
The transmission ends, and the screen in Abiola's living room goes dark. One by one, the men quietly take their leave. Kingibe is the last to go, and it's almost midnight by the time he gets to his apartment on Victoria Island. As he approaches the front door, Kingibe sees someone running towards him. It's his personal assistant, and he is waving a cordless phone handset frantically in the air.
Alhaji, sir.
The PA hands the phone over to Kingibe.
It's General Sani Abacha.
Kingibe quickly puts the phone to his ear.
Hello?
Sanusi Baba, I am sure you are surprised about our broadcast tonight.
Our broadcast? It's more like your broadcast, General.
It doesn't matter, Sai Baba. I would like you to join this government.
Why? Aren't you supposed to stay only for a few weeks?
Yes, be that as it may, but isn't it better to become entrenched in this government no matter how short our tenure? That way, when we do hand over, it will be easy for you since it will be a government of national unity. What do you say?
This isn't a decision I can take on my own, General. I suggest you mention it to Chief Abiola.
No problem, I will.
Kingibe disconnects the call and hands the handset back to his PA.
Sir, is everything all right?
Kingibe smiles and nods as he walks past his PA and heads to his bedroom.
Yes, everything is great. Good night.
Over in Ikoyi, Abacha is seated in his study. He hangs up the phone, picks up a pen, and reaches for the sheet of paper next to the phone. It's a list of names and phone numbers. He places a check mark next to the first name, Babagana Kingibe. Abacha picks up the phone and dials the next number on the list. He will spend the next couple of weeks going down the list, and one by one, every name will have a check mark next to it.
Hello? Chief Aneni?
For some, it only takes one phone call. For others, the process is more complicated. But they all eventually bow down, all except one man. Nigerian Headlines is a Triple E Media production. Production copyright 2022, Triple E Media production. This is season 1, June 12th. The Annulment, based on the comic book novel June 12th, 1993 Annulment by Abraham Oshoko. This episode was directed by John Iwodi, written by Ramat Muhammad and John Iwodi. Produced by Senet Ewa. Executive producer, Ramat Muhammad. Narrated by Ikponsa Ike Odiasi. Chris Maledo as Moshood Kashimawo Abiola and Professor Omor Omoruyi. Jide Balariwa as Ibrahim Badamosi Babangida. Michael Atungu as Sunny Abacha. Special thanks to the following voices: Jude Audu, Blessing Joel Akapson, Godwin Irabo, Gilbert Onwa, George Washington, Ijen Ewere Harrison, Uchechukwu Obiako, Charlotte Inyam, Adeniyi Kunu, Miriam Mohammed, Antonietta Kalunta, Rabia Adejia, Lucky Usama, John Iwodi, Dominic Tabakaji, and Uche Mba. Sound recording, Sam Tabakaji and Dominic Tabakaji. Sound editing, Sam Tabakaji. Sound design, Dominic Tabakaji and Ramat Muhammad. Mixing and mastering, Dominic Tabakaji. Cover art by Pixel Craft Multimedia. In most cases, we cannot know exactly what was said, but all of our reenactments are based on research. We would like to thank Abraham Oshoko for granting us the rights to adapt his novel into audio form. We also relied on additional sources of information, including Nigerian Soldiers of Fortune series, written by Max Sheolun.